Adventures in Research. This is the story of a sprig of mint and a dead mouse. It's also the story of one of the most maligned men who ever lived. A man of science who set out to prove he was right and proved himself so wrong that he set a new milestone in science. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science, produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today, telling you one of the most dramatic, tragic stories in the annals of science. The year is 1764, London, a crowded street. Perhaps we can catch a glimpse of the young man. Oh, yes, there he is, a tall, slender young man, rather delicate looking. He's a clergyman. He strides along briskly. And now he stops by a fashionable home and steps up to the door. This is a man of 30 with an unlucky fate at his elbow, a fate that bides its time. This genteel clergyman is...
Joseph Priestley, my card.
You have an appointment. Step inside, please, and I will inquire.
If he is not too busy, I do not want you to disturb him, but I am so anxious to see him, the greatest man in the world.
One moment, please.
Yes, the greatest man in the world. I would gladly give half my life for this chance to meet...
Yes, sir. You wish to see me?
Benjamin Franklin. Oh, bless you, sir.
Well, now, thank you, and bless you, too, while we're about it.
Oh, my apologies. I am so overcome with... actually seeing you in the flesh, Mr. Franklin, I...
All too solid flesh, I'm afraid. You English eat much more than we do in the colonies. I shall return home somewhat resembling a stuffed pig.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Joseph Priestley, minister to the parish at Nantwich. Huh? When I heard you were visiting London, I determined I would not let the opportunity pass without seeing you, the greatest man in the world.
Well, my good lad, those are words of praise indeed. But I doubt that I am that. No, the glasses to aid my eyes give me away, and the gout that gives me lameness shows me for what I am. A servant of His Majesty. Not too happy a servant, I assure you. A servant that would like some of the bonds loosened a trifle and an increase in wages and self-respect.
Oh, I know, sir. The American colonies are suffering. They have my profoundest sympathy. So you are Benjamin Franklin.
Yes, I think we've made that point abundantly clear. Now, let us sit down and see if we might find a subject more worthy of our mutual contemplation. It is rare, Reverend Priestley, for me to have a visitor from the Church of England.
Oh, I am not here in any official capacity. Indeed, as a minister, I think you will find me not lacking in a knowledge of more mundane matters. What a thrill to see you at last, Mr. Franklin. All England loves you, admires you. You, the man who captured a thunderbolt from the sky.
That is a bit thick, you know. I didn't capture any thunderbolt. Indeed, if one attempted it, you would find a thunderbolt capturing you.
Of course, I know nothing about science, Mr. Franklin. Nothing. Just what any educator might know, or a little less. But a man with your knowledge of this strange electricity, why, with you as a teacher... what might we not learn?
Me? A teacher?
A book, sir. A book on the history of electricity. Have you ever contemplated such a book?
Indeed, I have not. But you have, eh? Well, then, sir, why don't you write it?
But I am no scientist. Why, Mr. Franklin, I know nothing of...
You could learn, sir. You could learn.
A year later, Joseph Priestley published his book, The History and Present State of Electricity. Although lacking any scientific background, Priestley soon proved he had a flair for research. Priestley was launched on a career in science. He turned to chemistry, at the time a whole unknown continent of knowledge. Chemical beliefs of the day went something like this.
Now, class, we know, as Aristotle told us, the earth is composed into four elements. There are four ingredients and only four. These are fire, earth, air, and water, correct? Now, each of these four elements is again divided. For example, earth is mercurial, vitreous, or combustible. And let us not forget the soul of all matter. This we call phlogiston. Phlogiston it is which makes things burn. Phlogiston is the all-powerful soul of matter.
That was the state of chemistry, bound blindly to a soul of phlogiston, mysteriously present in things which burned in air. And it was air itself that Joseph Priestley, by chance, decided to study.
Phew. The air here in Leeds is very bad, eh, Marlowe?
Oh, yes, sir. It is the brewing house next door. The fermentation gives off a most disagreeable odor.
The air itself is bad, Marlowe. Now, why couldn't we examine this foul air, see what it is that smells so terrible, and remove it?
So Priestley set to work studying and experimenting on what was then called fixed air. Today we know it as carbon dioxide, but they didn't know that then.
So you see, Marlowe, there are different kinds of air. By mixing chalk and sulfuric acid, I have prepared a gas very similar to what we call fixed air. Then I run this fixed air through water, and the result is what you see here.
Oh, I say, look at the bubbles in the water. Oh, my word. Well,
take a sip of it. It's quite pleasant, I assure you.
Oh, it tickles, doesn't it? My goodness, sir, what have you done here?
I hope I have clarified fixed air.
What Joseph Priestley actually had done was invent soda water, carbonated water. The Royal Society honored Priestley with its highest award in chemistry. But the grim shadow of fate still stood in the wings, waiting to cross the path of Joseph Priestley. And he was unaware of it as he bent over his test tubes and beakers. Was not his soda water a success?
Makes a delicious julep, it does. A small glass of the water, followed by a draft of lemon juice or vinegar. It will cause the fixed air to be evolved inside the stomach. Excuse me.
So Joseph Priestley continued his experiments on gases, unmindful of fates or future. And soon he made his greatest discovery.
On Sunday, the 1st of August, I chanced to heat red oxide of mercury by using the sun's rays through a large burning lens. I presently noticed copious quantities of a peculiar air being expelled. I put a sample of this air into an enclosed jar where I had a lighted candle. The candle burned with amazing strength of flame. A bit of red-hot wood in the jar crackled and burned with a prodigious rapidity, like iron glowing with a white heat and throwing out sparks in all directions.
Priestley investigated this strange air further. He found that mice lived much longer in it than in ordinary air. And he found something else.
In a closed container, a burning candle or a live mouse injures the air so that both candle and mouse soon expire. This new gas I have discovered restores the air, replaces its vitality, just as nature finds a way to keep it replenished.
What Priestley had done, although he didn't know it, was to produce and isolate oxygen, that all-important life-giving element. And then he found out how nature helps maintain this element in the air.
Quite by accident, I placed a sprig of mint into a closed vessel of air in which a candle had burned out. After 10 days, I placed another candle in the vessel, and it burned perfectly. It would seem that plants reverse the effect of animal breathing and tend to keep the atmosphere sweet and wholesome.
These were exciting times for Joseph Priestley as he uncovered truth after truth in his laboratory. But the shadow of a cruel fate grew longer and longer. Priestley continued in his fever of experiments. Although his own discoveries disproved it, he believed he had at last found the long-sought soul of matter, phlogiston. But this was not the belief which was to condemn him.
I mean, sir, Priestley may be a genius, but to have the cheek to say those blasted colonists deserve to be free, why, a man could be hanged for less.
Indeed, Priestley came right out and said it. Said we must have separation of church and state in England. Of course, the man is an idiot. But even so, mouthing such stupid nonsense is... why, it's treason.
I will not have it. Priestley shall not be allowed in my house. Any man who has publicly espoused the cause of those accursed French revolutionists is not fit company. Imagine, Priestley saying he felt sympathetic to those barbarians who are overthrowing all of France.
I'll tell you, I hear what they're going to do. They're going to celebrate Bastille Day. Aye, a nice quiet celebration for Priestley and his friends right here in Birmingham. He's a traitor, that's what he is.
Oh, come now. What's the harm in letting him think as he wants to?
And bring the revolution over here? He's more than a traitor. Look what he said about the church and the state.
Oh, I say hanging's too good for him.
Oh, if it's a revolution he likes, so I will give him one. Are you with me?
Come on out there, Priestley. Or we'll set fire to your house.
Hey, someone's coming to the door. I seen him. Ah, there he is!
Please! Please, gentlemen! My family are inside this house. I have done no wrong. Certainly they have not. Leave us in peace. Do nothing that you will be sorry for, I beg of you.
Take that!
Who threw that stone?
Here's another, you traitor!
Here's a torch. Come on, then. Rush the house.
Priestley and his family barely escaped when the mob took over his house, scattered his valuable papers, looted his rooms, and set fire to the wreckage. In London, where he fled, the persecution continued. Associates renounced him. His sons could find no employment. So Joseph Priestley, who had reaped the harvest of his belief in political and religious liberty, turned his eyes away toward America. Here in this land of freedom, Priestley lived out his days, chatting with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, preaching to a congregation that included President John Adams. He continued his experiments, helped pioneer American chemistry by instructing our early chemists. When Priestley died at 71, he still believed in phlogiston, unaware that his own discoveries were soon to overthrow the theory he championed. Yes, Joseph Priestley was proved wrong by the very theories he thought proved him right. But his tragic life brought great returns, for his bright flaming candle lit the path for Antoine Lavoisier, the first modern chemist, and for all who followed him through his inspiring adventure in research. And that's today's Adventures in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to armed forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.